Today's guest is what you might call a quintuple threat. She sings, she acts, she dances, she directs, and, as if that weren't enough, she performs acrobatics while singing 30 feet above the stage. I'm talking about none other than Lucy Arnaz. Lucy first appeared in our homes as a teenager when she was a series regular on her mom's hit TV show, Here's Lucy. Her amazing talents are what have sustained a career in show business for over 50 years. It would be impossible to list all of her credits, but Lucy first appeared on Broadway in 1979, and just last year brought the house down nightly performing the role of Bertha during the national tour of Pippin. Over the years, Lucy has starred in movies, directed an Emmy-winning documentary about her parents, and produced her own nightclub and concert act, showcasing her vocal and comedic gifts. Lucy and I first met in 2000 when she originated the role of Alexandra in the West End production of The Witches of Eastwick, a show I wrote with John Dempsey based on the John Updike novel. Night after night, Lucy landed jokes brilliantly, sang beautifully, and flew high above the stage and over the audiences of the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. Lucy joins me by phone today from Palm Springs, California, where she makes her home with her husband, actor Larry Luckinbill, a future guest on Take It From the Top. Let's find out what makes Lucy tick and how her gift for saying yes has taken her to the top. Lucy Arnaz Luckinbill, it just makes my heart so happy to be talking to you today. Thank you for being here.
No, see, just you saying that makes me happy. Thanks, Dana. Yeah, how come we don't talk more often? Gosh, life just went by like since we worked together, didn't it?
It just whizzed by. So I'm going to start out with just some, fun questions. When you were a child, Lucy, what was your favorite book?
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah, you start off with the really hard stuff. Who can remember back that far? That's a hard question. Okay, so my first memories of actually having a favorite book, I read the entire Nancy Drew series cover to cover. Nancy Drew mysteries. And so, when I was much, much younger, who knows, there was, alphabet books and stories about the letters and the numbers. Don't have much recollection of that too much, except when I was about 8, I think I started reading Nancy Drew, and I loved them. I love murder mysteries and solving problems. I'm still like that in a weird way.
So the solving problems is really what spoke to you.
Yeah, the solving problems, and she would get clues and then have to follow it through and figure out what to do. And it's funny that now that you're asking me that, because sometimes I think what my best thing is now is solving problems, whether it's what to do with the furniture in a room or how to direct a play or, I like to solve problems. Oh, this is what's not happening. That's not working right. How can we fix that? I love that. So interesting.
Yeah. So an analytical mind, and you really kind of.
More than I assumed I had when I was younger. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So, and that sort of manifests itself now as a director, as a performer, as someone who puts together these incredible.
Yeah, even documentary making. It's like, well, what's your subject, and what are you going to talk to people about to find out what the story is with that person or those people, and then when you get all their answers, then you have to sit down and solve the mystery. You have to figure out from what everybody said what the big answer is, and then what's missing. Maybe you didn't talk to enough of the right people. Maybe, just like journalism is like that, right? They send you out on a story, and you have to dig. And then you have to look at it and go, this doesn't sound fair. This is one-sided. I got to go find out what those people think, And I love that. I could have probably been very happy as a journalist, actually.
Fantastic. Great. So it's just finding all sides of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like it's interesting to you. You probably have played a lot of your favorite roles and everything, but if you could play any role, any gender, any age, any vocal range, what would it be?
Oh, my God. Wow. That's a really good question, too. That's like you don't have to worry about being capable of doing it or being the right person to do it, just if you could tweak your nose and just do it, right? Any gender. Annie, that's the whole booth. Only one? Let's see.
Oh, you can have several. Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. Hit me with them.
Can I play the devil in Witches of Eastwick?
Oh, God, yes. Please. That would be so awesome.
I am gung-ho for pretty much all the parts that are out there. So I love that your question was any age, any gender, any vocal range. That's incredible. Because if that were true, I would line them all up and take them all on, one after another. That's how much I love musical theater. But you cancel yourself out on a lot of stuff. Because, that I can't really sing. Or you listen to a lot of the stuff like in Wicked, and I would love to play Elphaba in Wicked, but I can't sing that. I can't go there. And, well, how cool would it be if you could, you know?
Yeah.
How amazing would it be if you could sing some of the stuff in Rent, you know, just because there's a lot of the new songs that are being created. For the most part, I think something happened along the way, and it became about stratospheric notes and vocal pyrotechnics and stuff that you could really humans aren't supposed to make those sounds, you know, like, what? Mm-hmm. And I think things that are being written now that maybe are completely opposite from what was being written back when, you know, back in the beginning of musical comedies, there were the soprano roles, and then there was Ato Annie, you know, there was always the other chick who didn't sing like that. And I always went, well, those will be my parts because I don't like that soprano stuff. I don't sing up there and it doesn't interest me at all. But then it became not just soprano. These are like belting high Fs. What is that, you know? And I wonder how you get to learn to do that. It's something you have to train from the time you're very, very young. Because my daughter listened to that music, and she instinctively kind of told her voice, go there. So I'm thinking that it's kind of where you what you hear, and your voice trails in that direction. And that's not what I heard, you know. But I would want to experience it all of those parts.
Yeah.
Not just the ones that I think about, you know, oh, sure, you'll do Gypsy, you'll do Mame, you'll do all the things that you're right for at a certain age. But there are so many. Sunset Boulevard, but that is kind of in my range. But everything that Patti LuPone can sing. How about I try that for just one weekend? I'd like to be able to
one
do that.
Weekend. It sounds like you said all these filters come up. You mentioned that.
Yeah.
And so what do you do to move past the filters?
Well, I say yes to things more often now than I ever have before, but they don't necessarily involve singing in a range that I'm not capable of.
Right.
But there's like, you know, would you like to play Grandma in the new Pippin First National Tour, which involves hanging upside down on a trapeze with a guy with no net and no hooks and no thing. No, I flew as a witch, but I was hooked on, you know. It's like, this was go up 30 feet and learn how to pull yourself up and down and backwards and forwards and hang underneath a man who's only holding you by your pelvis, you know, above the stage. And to say, okay, someone said I could do that. They said I can do it. I saw, you know, Andrea Martin do it, and I know that Tova did it, and I think if they did it, I could probably do it. I'll say yes. Being brave enough to say yes to things that are out of your comfort zone is one thing that happens with some age experience, you know, and doing things, how do you navigate to doing things you want to do? The funny thing is, I've been so lucky all my life, and call it luck, call it universe, putting you in the path you're supposed to be in, that I get things offered to me that I never would expect in a million years. It's happened a lot. I haven't really had to negotiate or navigate my way down a path pushing things aside. You know, I want to go do that. I'm going to get that part. When I know a lot of actors do, Bernadette Peters, for one, told me, she said, Lucy, I show up in people's offices long before they've even hired their casting director. I find out things are happening, and I just show up. And I say, I want to play this part. I go, you're the problem. You know, it's like, it's you. You did it all by yourself. You know, we blame the producers. No, it's you. She's amazing. She's amazing. She knew what she knows what she wants. She's going to go get it. Boom. I was never like that. Maybe the way I grew up, I was, do you want to go on this show? What? No, I want to go to college. Well, but you could go on this show that I'm, you know, starring in, and you can learn about the bit. Well, I don't think I want to do that. Okay. Well, wait a minute. And then I said, maybe this is not such a stupid idea. And that presented itself. And then because that presented itself, Summer Stock presented itself. And then because that happened, the first national tours started to happen. And because that happened, you know, Broadway happened. And it, I got on this roller coaster, including in the middle of it all, in the middle of the best of it. Like, they're playing our song on Broadway, first Broadway show ever, big, big, magnificent hit. I felt like Cinderella at the ball. And I meet Larry Luckinbill. And I fall incredibly in love. 28 years old. He's got two children. And I decide, I'm going to get married again. I was married when I was very young. It wasn't right. I'm going to get married and I'm going to have children. We can do this. Well, you know, that's kind of insane. It's very difficult once you decide you're going to do that to navigate, continue to navigate towards anything else that you wanted to do career-wise gets way harder. Like, even being asked to do Witches of Eastwick, that came to me. I didn't chase that down at all. I got a phone call. And I was like, oh, my God. To go meet who? Cameron McIntosh. Really? Yes, it's, he's, you know, wants to see you for Witches of Eastwick, blah, blah, blah. And I was thrilled to death, but I thought, oh, my God, what happens if I get it? I'm going to have to go to London. I have to pick up my kids and take them all to London. Oh, my God. Oh, they're going to kill me. You know, we just got settled in New York. So it's all navigating. It's all of it is trying to figure out, weighing the positives and the negatives. And I, again, that was just like, I can't see saying no. I can see, you know, saying yes and something terrible might happen and I don't think it's a bad idea later on. But right now I can't see saying no. I have to say yes to this. This is too great. So when it happened, I was beyond thrilled, you know, and it's all such a great experience, whether with anything, even if something you call icky or disastrous at the time, you turn around years later and you go, but if that didn't happen, I would never have learned how to blah, 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 blah. You know, I wouldn't have met so-and-so. I wouldn't have made that turn. And I truly trust that now. It's happened so many times that I just don't think about it anymore. I go, okay, well, we don't know what this is happening for, but it'll tell itself at some point, you know. So I guess I, the answer, the long extended answer is I trust that things are going to come my way. The good is going to come my way. I'm in just being open to accepting it and not getting in my own way of saying, no, I can't possibly, oh, I wouldn't want to, that's not right for me. I couldn't, I don't do too much of that. I say yes more often than I sometimes even think I should, but something good always comes from it, you know? I've only said no on a continuum basis when it had something to do with my family. Or I said, that's enough, I can't be here anymore. Like with Pippin, what a great part that was. It stops the show every night.
Oh my
you get
gosh.
The most thunderous applause at the end of the show because you did that crazy thing and you're in your 60s and how dare you go up there and do that. And you feel so proud of yourself every night, you can't see straight. But it's a tiny little role in the play. I could have continued doing it for 2 years. I had so much fun. But I have a husband at home. Our kids are grown. He's got, you know, they're gone. He's at home. He's 80 years old. He's in great shape. We're on our third act, you know. And so I didn't want to be on the road for another 7 months. It was like, no, you have to stop now. You have to go home. And so you just keep weighing where you are. Where should I be now? Where am I going to go, you know?
It sounds also like you're able to find the good part, even you said, so it feels like disastrous. It feels like icky or something like that. But you're also, what I'm hearing is you walk away and you go, there's a gift there somewhere.
Yes. Even when you can't even get that far into the thought. But I remember a long time ago, I studied a little bit of Course in Miracles. And one of the things that popped out of it to me was an expression, we don't know what anything is for. But it's the way it was phrased. It wasn't like, oh, you know, there's where one door closes, another one opens. It was the way it was phrased. We don't know what anything is for, which sounds like, well, the hidden message there is that everything is for something. We just don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, then you just have to shut up and keep walking, you know? Then it's, we don't know. This might look really terrible right now. Uh-huh. It could be a death in the family. It could be a terrible accident. It could be any number of things. But you've got to go, we don't know what anything is for. And maybe it's not for something that's going to make me jump up and down with happiness, but maybe it's going to change the planet in some way. Who knows? We don't know what anything is for. So I say that a lot when things don't look like what I consider positive at the moment, you know? And it does turn out to be to be accurate. It does.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, I found that in my own life. Some of the most, I don't know, sad sort of moments, moments I would not necessarily want to write in my life story.
What you consider a failure moment, you know?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
A go back, a regret, a mistake, a trip up. Any of those things that we're not so proud of. We don't, like you say, wouldn't want to write it in my autobiography. Say, but you learned something, didn't you? That's
absolutely.
How, if everything went right, we'd learn nothing.
That's great.
We'd learn nothing, and what a boring game that would be. And it's just kind of all a big game down here, you know? Have you all just snore?
Yeah. So. Well, you know, you have had kind of an amazing life. I mean, you talked about your mom and dad and all that, and you just had, but it's really, you've had to have faith, you've had to trust, you've had to know what it is you want and be clear about it. These are the things that we all have. And I love that you said you've learned to say yes. You know, more things.
Well, you spend a lot of time learning to say no, you know, growing up.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not going to drink that. I'm not going to smoke that. I'm not going to take that. I'm not going to skip school. I'm not going to go out with that person. And then, you know, you've accomplished what you've accomplished, and you get kind of safe. You get in the safety zone, and you think, I have to take care of myself. I have to do this. I have to do that. But then you go, well, wait a minute. Now, this is that stretch. That's stretching. So, for an example, Ron Abel and Chuck Stephan wrote this new musical to Hazel. They're turning Hazel into a musical. And I've been sort of in the behind scenes because they're good friends of mine. And the first, you know, script that came out, they sent to me. And we talked about it. And I made some suggestions, and they were good. And then I suggested Clea Blackhurst to play Hazel because, I mean, I just said, you've got to hear this woman. She's amazing, and there's nobody on the planet that would be better than that. And then they decided, you know what? Screw it. She's the best person for this job, and let's just go with it. And so I felt really good about that I had handed them Clea and trusted her to do that. So one day they talked, the same day, this is really crazy, the same day that I got the phone call, do I want to go into the First National Company of Pippin, would go into it. I mean, it was create the part in the First National Company of Pippin.
Wow.
Was 2 minutes after I had just had a conversation with Ron and Chuck asking me to direct Hazel in their first staged reading in New York. And I thought, what? You're asking me to direct it? I'm not a director. Get a director. You should get somebody really, really good who's been, no, we want you because you have good ideas. Listen, you thought of Clea. You gave us a... And my instinct was to talk myself out of the job, you know, literally say, no. And I went, well, okay, because I do kind of like to tell people what to do. I do like to solve problems. I do like to, you know, experience stuff like that. So I said yes. I thought, how bad could it be? It's a staged reading, right? I can't screw it up too bad. And I worked really, really hard, ended up doing it during the 1 month that I was in New York. I popped into the New York company, the Broadway company of Pippin, during the tour. And I also, at the same time as starring on Broadway in that part, I was directing this staged reading the whole week. And it went well enough that they decided to up it and do a three-week lab. And they asked me to direct that. And I said, wait a minute, what's going on here? So I did. And it worked well enough that now they have a full production, which I'm not going to direct. I wouldn't even if they asked me to, because you're not giving me a $1.5 million, you know, production until I've done a few more little things. I wouldn't trust myself to do that. But it was great. But because of that, now I've been asked to direct several other shows. And that never would have happened if I hadn't just said, yeah, okay, you know.
Yeah, and also if I could even go back another step, you connected people. You were not invested in any way other than to connect them with Clea.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I love the people who wrote it, and I love Clea. And I thought, well, you know how you recommend people and say you should work with so-and-so because you should. It's the way you should go, you know?
And, you know, we don't call that telling people what to do. We call that leadership.
Okay. like being a leader.
You talked about, you know, your path. You said you don't have to go navigating and pushing things out of your path. What is your path?
I'm not sure I know. I think the only path that I'm on is to be happy and joyous and feel free to live the life, you know, just to be present every moment. I don't have a scored sheet in front of me that says I've got to get there by a certain date or my goal is to do this or to do that. Mm-hmm. Once I had my children and I got married, I guess my goals became about making sure that they were healthy, that mm-hmm. they knew what they were supposed to know in order to survive, like a mommy bird does. You got to fly, kids. Put food on the table, so there's a certain amount of you got to show up for the jobs. And luckily, I love my job. Mm. So, but I don't have that forward thinking, ambitious thing. Sometimes I wish I had more of it. I don't really live in front. I live as much as I can right now. And right now has always been so incredibly busy that I haven't ever had to think about it like, oh, God, what's going to happen? Stuff just happens, and it's so true. I freaking moved to Palm Springs, California, which I thought would be like big cleansing breath. It's the busiest place I've ever lived. It's hilarious. You know, I still love doing my concerts, so I think a little bit ahead in the sense that I want to be booked to do that. I do the best work I can. And I mm-hmm. hope that somebody writes about it and finds it and asks me to do other work. That's all you
that
can
sounds
do.
Like words to live by, if you ask me. It's
well,
just do the best
I'm
work
sure I could be more actively involved in it in some form or fashion. But the truth of it is, it's never proven to be that successful to do that. And you can't even expect that when you do a fantastic job in one area that it's going to necessarily manifest itself immediately again in a similar situation. It never seems to work that way either. You know, mm-hmm. I'm constantly vying in a different direction. Just as, oh, I'm just getting the fire stoked under the cabaret mm-hmm. and the nightclub thing. And then, zhoop, you're going to go over here and you're going to do a television series. Mm. Oh, and then you're in a TV series, which you work really hard on for a year, but it bombs and doesn't get renewed. And so then all the work you did were in the other cabaret and the nightclub things. You sort of, now you're playing catch up because they already booked the next 2 years with other people. You know, they're all separate industries, even though I'm in all of them. As an actor, singer, person. So adding directing or anything like that in a way is good because you can sort of pick your own projects. And nightclubs, I can put my own show together and tell people it's available and there are mm-hmm. places that want to book you, you know. It's better than sitting waiting for the casting directors to figure out, well, what does she look like now? But how old is she really? And, you know, I don't know if she's right for that. Well, do you have any recent film on her? It's a big business, and it's hard to make all the rounds, you know, to be present in each corner. I mean, when I stop and think about it, I realize it's kind of wacky the way I've lived my life, but it's also been really great, and I've had experiences I never would have had otherwise, so,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, that young girl who was just finishing high school, if you could go back to her and have a conversation with her today, what would you tell her?
You know, I would tell her that boys don't matter that much. mm-hmm. I would just say, make boys a little less important in your life. Make boys meaning having somebody, having a fella. I think my mother used to say, oh, you're so boy crazy. And, you know, she was right, but it was more than that. I think I was kind of romance obsessed. Like if I didn't have someone in my life, mm-hmm. I was incomplete. I wasn't happy being alone. So I was constantly making decisions in my life based on the guy. So, you know, in retrospect, the girl in high school was doing pretty well, actually. The girl mm-hmm. in high school was on the Here's Lucy show and experiencing theater for the first time and learning constantly. She was doing music and she was acting with amazing people and she was growing day by day by day. And mm-hmm. I mean, if I could go back to her, I would just say, appreciate yourself a little more. You're doing great. You know, you're pretty amazing. I don't think she thought that. I think she didn't have as much self-esteem as she needed to have. Mm-hmm. But as far as what she was doing and where she was going, I thought was pretty good, you know?
Actually. Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I went to, you know, high school in the 60s and graduated mm-hmm. at the height of the hippie generation and a lot of pot smoking. And I never, ever got into any of it. It's astounding. Mm-hmm. Because my brother went the complete other direction. I mean, he practically lost him to drugs and alcohol and stuff. Mm. And I never went there. I got into the best school that had the best, a school that had the best drama department. That's what I wanted. Because I used to put on plays in my backyard, and I wanted to continue that study. And so I went to Immaculate Heart High School in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy to be there and auditioning for little plays and be in the Genetians. They called themselves the Genetians, the St. Genetius, you know, for theater.
Love it.
And I directed, and I made sets and costumes, and I played every part that came my way. And then because my mother was changing her television series to a new format, she asked me to go on the show, and Desi, you know, would play the kids on the show. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm having a really good time in high school. I'm doing theater, and I have another year and a half, and then I'm going to go to Northwestern if I can get in, and that's what I want to do. And so it wasn't in my plans at all to suddenly switch and go into television. Now, what?
Right.
You know, but I thought, well, now don't be completely stupid, Lucy. It could be a good thing. It's number one show, you know, hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you could possibly learn something there, too. I mean, I somehow survived the 60s and never developed any kind of addiction.
That
except
is amazing.
The boys.
Except for the boys. You know,
except
we all
for
have
romance.
Our drug of choice.
My drug of choice are men.
Oh, well, I can think of so many things that are worse.
I've named two.
Oh, you mentioned, well, okay, you mentioned that you did learn something when you went ahead and you did the TV show, and it was like, maybe I could learn something. What was your takeaway?
Oh, well, my God. First of all, it was 6 seasons of the Here's Lucy show, and not only working with my mother, which, you know, goes without saying, was phenomenal at what she did and knew the craft better than anybody in the business. Better than anybody in the business. I mean, they invented it, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. But we also had a guest star, someone very well known. Practically every week there was a guest star on Here's Lucy. Mm-hmm. So I had a chance to watch and learn from a zillion different kinds of people.
Wow.
Musical people, regular comedians, drama people. Everybody wanted to be from, you know, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor to Wally Cox to Ruth Buzzy, Carol Burnett, you know, Orson Welles, I don't know, John Wayne, Jackie Gleason. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
Amazing.
So I learned from the best and the worst, and that was the best education ever. Plus, every year we did a bunch of musicals, like full-fledged, pre-recorded most of the time for the sound to be right. There would be something written in the script where so-and-so had to come and you had to do a song or two songs or an entire show of songs. And, I mean, this is years and years before Glee or anything that was anything similar to that. There wasn't anything like that in a situation comedy. So here I was basically learning musical theater on a sitcom every week, and they knew we would do it in front of a live audience. You know, one take, Charlie. I mean, the whole big, long tap dancing number where I climb a pole and tap dance on a bar and slide back down the pole and, you know, pop, 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 pop with three girls all at on your market, set, go. And then cut. Print. No retakes. That's it. We got it. We're done. So little tiny musicals every week.
Right. I remember seeing them. I do.
That's amazing stuff, just amazing stuff. So when they say, do you want to hang upside down on a trapeze? I know how to go, okay. You know,
or fly through the Drury Lane.
Yeah, or fly through the Drury Lane. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was going to college. I thought I needed to go to Northwestern. I did not. I needed to go to Paramount Studios, Stage 24, for 6 years.
Incredible. You can't buy that kind of education.
Mm-mm.
You know, you just can't. There's no money available for that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You mentioned being present a couple times. That's important for you, to be present. How do you get present?
You stay in the now. Be here now. Tommy Toon used to tell me, be here now. Lucier, tranquillidar, Lucier. Be here now. And I know what the hell he meant. You know, at that time I was 22 years old or something. But it's exactly what it means. It's to stop thinking about what just already happened and bitching about that. Stop worrying about what's going to happen. And you be here now. Doesn't mean you can't prepare and study and, you know, book your rooms ahead of time and all of that stuff.
Right.
But you don't worry about it. You do what you can do, and you get off of it and stay in the now. And any time I can do that, I am so better off, so much better off. My father used to say, there must be a way. That was his favorite saying, there must be a way. When they told him you can't do a filmed situation television show in front of a live audience with, you know, enough three cameras, he said, no, there must be a way. And he found one.
There's a wonderful phrase, the bigger the why, the easier the how.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You know, when you kind of figure this has to be done, there's just no, you know, there's just no saying no. This is really necessary. Then all of a sudden, ways of doing it become available.
Yeah, it's almost like they say, you know, tell the universe what you want and be specific. If you really put it out there that this is something you're interested in, and you I don't know how to do it right this second, but I'm thinking it can be done. Somehow, you attract the way.
Could not agree more. I think we manifest a lot of stuff in our lives.
I mean, it works the same way for negative things. You keep thinking something terrible is going to happen. It will. It absolutely will. I mean,
so
that's
true.
The universe. Bring it on,
so
you know?
I know. If anything was possible, which we know it is, what would be your next big accomplishment?
Okay. I want to write a book. I want to write about my life, but I stop myself constantly. I get stuck in the worst ways. And like you said, I've had an amazing life. I have.
Yeah.
It wasn't all very pretty, and a lot of people don't want to know that because they are very, very fond of the subject matter, you know, of my folks and family. I know, at least I know that my next move is that.
I got to tell you something. I can't wait until it's done. I want a signed copy, Lucy Arnaz Luckinbill. If I was a really smart person, what else would I ask you?
You asked some great questions. Can I tell you? I mean, this is not your basic interview. I feel like I have been in Primal Scream therapy for the last hour, which is amazing. I'm going to have to go. I think I owe you money.
No. But I might quote you on that.
I think I owe you for this. It's good, though, to look at things in depth. You know, one of the things I don't like about being interviewed for the most part is that I've been asked the same five questions, three questions, maybe even one question for my whole life, and it gets tedious, trust me. And it's so refreshing to just talk about life in general the way you would with anybody.
Yeah, that's what I love about this. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you for joining me today, Lucy Arnaz.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Side effects from listening to Take It From the Top include climbing out of a creative rut, getting inspired, and or living the life of your dreams. If these symptoms persist, tell a friend to download the podcast immediately.